I suppose that the speed at which they played, I don't think any of us can last more than 10 minutes. It wouldn't be an exaggeration to say that it's impossible for us to imitate them. The high level of understanding and sportsmanship possessed by its participants is impressive. Just switch on the light and everyone stops, remain motionless without taking the dissonant attitudes of our football stars. It was undoubtedly a beautiful spectacle that made us enthusiastically support the victory of our favorite team. The match usually lasts 2 hours, and those 46 players had been chosen from among the best to take part in the meeting in my honor. At one point, Dr. Jensel looked at me fixedly, saying, "I'm afraid there will be complications in your metabolism, given the absence here of certain elements of your atmosphere. Although your physique is resisting gallantly, far beyond our expectations, we have taken the necessary precautions to avoid any discomfort. That's why I invite you to take advantage of your limited time on future visits to get a better feel for our system of living. As far as I'm concerned, I'm ready to leave," was my brief reply. After a few minutes, and in one of the interruptions to the match, we stood up and, with real amazement, I saw the players turn to our section in the stands, as well as the whole crowd stood up and greeted us fraternally with their arms upraised or waving. "This honor is all yours," said Dr. Jensel at the same time. Jensel said, while placing his hand on my shoulder. Waving my arm back, I tried to thank him for this spontaneous and sincere gesture that moved me to tears. Again, supported by Dr. Jensel, I went down towards the floor that skirted the field and we left through one of the nearest doors. On the way, I reflected thoughtfully on the generosity of those people far superior to me, who had deigned to honor me with such distinction in the collective demonstration I had just been given. Honestly, I felt ashamed of my insignificance, of the lamentable state of my clothes, in short of my insignificance in the face of eminently superior beings, who had just given me a lesson in cordiality to the petty prejudices of an Earthman. Chapter 12, Flying a Flying Saucer. So, did you enjoy the game organized in your honor? The festivity was commemorating your visit to this planet, and I'm pleased to have contributed to it. Dr. Jensel told me with remarkable frankness. I was touched by this honor and I recognize very well that I don't deserve such great consideration. However, I have an excellent impression of everyone and of the players' noble chivalry, their discipline, agility and commitment to the game. Their quick thinking in advancing to possible favorable positions to score a goal. As spectacle that I witnessed, I thought it was magnificent. I enjoyed it immensely. I owe it all to you. In this vein, I commented to Dr. Jensel on certain details of the competition we had just witnessed, and, during the conversation, another curiosity arose. Are the usual entertainments limited to sports and games? Our festivities aren't just about only sports games, but we have as many different kinds of activities as you have in your neighborhood. He enlarged. We organize, as terrestrials do, great festivals commemorating births, graduations, promotions, weddings, etc. Even the death of one of our citizens is still a source of joy for us. The joy of duty fulfilled and the journey over. On festive days, we gather en masse at the venue, to which there are no invitations, because we consider ourselves to be one big family. If the party takes place in any home or any other place, the participants assume their places and soon everything is literally taken over. As any one of our homes can hold around 600 people, at the start of the honors the celebrants begin to feed themselves with the liquids made available, the nutritional value of which known by the color of the bottle. An edifying conversation takes place, encompassing the whole room, which touch on a broad range of topics and the most varied subjects. It is usual for someone to stand up and give a lecture, which is silently followed by the gaze of the others, who pay the utmost attention. They drink fluids in moderation and, out of a sense of education, they do not overdo it, and there is no danger of intoxication because the food is so pure and the drinks do not contain the slightest dose of alcohol. These were, in a way, his words, whose meaning I tried to convey to readers. However, I can add to what was said in his explanation the following: celebrations of joy on the occasion of a birth are only held after a careful clinical examination and after a declaration that the unborn child is free of dangerous defects. On the occasion of a death, convinced that this person has already overflowed the cup of suffering by taking another step towards God, they rejoice and take pleasure in certain celebrations, commemorating the person's life, held with great sincerity, for they are unaware of revenge or hatred and are devoid of pride and vanity. We were already some distance from the stadium, when my kind companion asked me the following question: are you capable of controlling and driving one of our vehicles, a flying disc? If I am taught how to use it and how to drive it, I think I'll manage just fine, I replied, surprised. He happily took me to one of the parked craft and invited me to get in. He bade me approach the control panel and began a lesson in piloting the aircraft, pointing out the levers and buttons, specifying the ones that I had to move to make the thing work. In this way, he tried to show me the way to steer left or right, as well as how to make it descend without the danger of crashing. I only had to operate about 5 controls. With them, I would be able to move slowly and safely over the city. As for the others, I was not to touch them under any circumstances. After the briefing, he had me repeat the lesson in great detail, including the special circumstances for the use of certain controls, so that my experiment would be a success. Indeed, I found the instructions very clear and I learnt everything quickly without any difficulties. I was now able to make a journey on my own. However, before he left the craft, Dr. Jansen referred to the levers with grooves, which I shouldn't touch in order to prevent the craft from flying away into space. You understood the explanations well. Do you have any doubts or further questions? I think I'm well prepared, I said. As he walked away, Dr. Jansen tried to reassure me, take your time and remain calm, because nothing will happen to you. Don't be impatient if you encounter any difficulty, because there's no danger. If I'm risking so much, it's because I trust you more than I do in myself. I'm doing this with the conviction that I'll come out of this experience unscathed. That's what I told him. Then I wish you a good journey. Alone, inside the aircraft, I confessed to having felt a shiver down my spine, and it was more in order to live up to Dr. Jansel's trust that I set out on the trip, because I thought to myself, am I going to get into some kind of trouble? However, following the instructions I had received, I pressed the start button and the craft was already traveling at high speed, which it did almost imperceptibly, without any oscillation. In an instant, I was over the city and I tried to steer it in the agreed direction. I moved the lever because, as I'd learned, I was supposed to land in the southern part of the city, in other words, on the right-hand side of my departure point. As soon as I flicked the appropriate lever to steer in that direction, the whole craft began to rotate around instead of heading towards the desired point. I was surprised by this unforeseen circular line of flight. I was like an apprentice pilot who, wanting to give the aeroplane a certain angle, overcorrects, forcing it to turn back on itself. I saw that the maneuver wasn't right and I tried to stabilize the aircraft so that it could continue in a straight line. Despite my attempts, I couldn't get a satisfactory result and, in despair, I didn't even look out of the window. I was so preoccupied with finding a solution to the impasse. Trying to remember the instructions I had received, I decided to make combinations and as a result the steering wheel went in different directions, zigzagging aimlessly, going up and down without orientation, which made me distinctly uneasy. In successive disorientated evolutions, followed by sudden stops, I spent several minutes flying aimlessly, without an exact solution that would put me on the right path. I thought I was lost and had no way out. My nervous system contributed a lot to my confusion and I even prayed to God to take pity on me and protect me by making me happy to come down safe and sound. I was already desperate and confused. I had lost track of everything, inexplicably, The flyer took off in the right direction, picked up speed and landed normally on a platform, as if nothing had happened. Having recovered from my shock, I quickly left the craft and spotted Dr. Janzel, who was laughing heartily. "I was delighted to see your expertise," he told me in a friendly tone. "What a fright I had, Doctor. I overcorrected and it was difficult to adjust the controls to get here. Imagine if I couldn't get back, what would become of me?" "That's what I said, in the naive conviction that I was the author of such a feat." "In any case, you would have reached this place," Dr. Janzel objected and, to reassure me, he enlarged. "The device was being guided by two powerful controls, here on the ground. So why did you give me such a detailed lesson as if you were worried about me? It would be an indignity on our part, a real offense, to return you to your planet without your precious life. Don't you think so? In that case, wasn't it me who made the landing?" Patiently, he smiled kindly and patted me on the shoulder. "Have no doubt, you contributed a lot to this short flight." I was all smug, but inwardly I thought, I didn't control anything, I played the part of a puppet and traveled at the risk of the automatic controls. That was the reality. In the midst of my misunderstood pride, aware of my expertise as a pilot, I tried to detail to Dr. Janzel my control problems and the details of the way I had tried to correct the craft. He listened attentively, however, I could tell from his demeanor that my story was not convincing him, as he was clearly not interested. On reflection, I realized that I had done nothing, it was all just an experiment, a joke to see how I was doing. So, I tried to give the lecture a new direction and remembered that I wanted to ask about music. Why do we listen without interruption to the natural music from the heavens and the singing of the when we don't hear any other noises, not even our own voice? I'll summarize, the physical state of the atmosphere makes it difficult for certain sounds to propagate, and this propagation doesn't impress the auditory sense. And, as always, in his desire to make himself understandable, he gave me this explanation: sounds, like any other substance, have a body. These bodies are distinct and are selected. So, let's say, the categories of bodies are A, B, C, D, F, etc. Our ears pick up vibratory categories, allowing three bodies to enter, A, B and F, while the ears of the earthly creature pick up another three elements, I, C and D. It so happens that the melody of birds and the sound of natural music are catalogued in class A, therefore, we pick it up and so do you. It is therefore a common tuning. In conclusion, if the sounds of hammering, the possible collision of metal tools and the like are categorized as type F, our ears can't pick them up, because they are outside our auditory wave layer. So you can hear noises that we can't hear, while we in turn hear sounds that your Earthman ears can't perceive. But why in our world are we forced to listen to the unnerving noise of machinery, engines, radio chatter, bombs going off that frighten us, when here complete silence reigns? That, my friend, although I doubt it, is a penance, in other words, a divine grace. But how can this happen if divine grace as a good and not as a scourge, and it is in this condition that we classify pride on earth? Yes, undoubtedly, the noises and diseases are two beneficial scourges, in other words, scourges that God has bequeathed to planet earth. They are moral and spiritual penances that are part of the evolutionary path of earthlings. Through the vehicle of penance is how you manage to reach the heights of progress, even if you understand it as negative atonement or settlement. This thought reflected the advanced condition of that humanity, inhabiting a superior, highly evolved world, where everything was silent. Not a silence of boredom or fear, but full of a comforting stillness that gave me an indescribable well-being. Here, nothing could be heard, despite the intense movement of the flying craft crossing each other at high speed in a constant coming and going, in addition to those in the category of interplanetary space that went up and down, whose trajectories I couldn't follow. I forgot to mention the existence, in certain intersections of avenues, of power-generating plants. These plants that I did not visit are located in the center of the intersections of some avenues. They have their domes at the same level as the sidewalks and inside are the mechanisms for the diffusion of magnetic force and control of flying craft in circulation. I believe this power and also control system comes from them. Stops, direction and recall, return of flying craft throughout a given area. These plants probably communicate with each other under the pavement of the avenues and branch out throughout the city in an underground channeling system, involving many laborers in intensive technical supervision. This is my conclusion. In the right areas there are workers at work hammering out parts, without making any discernible noise. As I said, what impressed me most about this colossal metropolis, either because its harmony thrilled me and touched me deeply, or because it was always there in my ears, was the marvelous music coming from the heavens. Would this music be the symphony of one's own nature, classified as a symphony of the worlds? I accepted it as a miracle that left me perplexed and made me realize that it was impossible for a human being to produce such a marvel. It was the expression of something sweet, harmonious and comforting, impregnated with something divine that saturated my innermost being, in short, a heavenly symphony performed for our soul. I don't know how to give a satisfactory definition because I'm not a musician. However, I can tell you that when one sound was made, four or five others would appear at the same time, with the first one continuing to be heard as if it were the foundation for the other musical notes. Finally, everything intertwined in an inexplicable way, it harmonized, dying out in a single tone. I've read elsewhere that the Grand Canyon in the United States of America, an interesting phenomenon occurs. In the deep valleys of those steep mountain massifs, the wind passes through and, in its continuous movement it produces a kind of natural music. The modulations produced are sometimes so that a strange music is established as if it were a melody from nature itself. In that sepulchral silence of the Grand Canyon many people had the opportunity to appreciate such phenomena and those with the most acute senses recognized it as music coming from outer space through the deformations of the wind. I can say that the music I heard was ecstatically captivating and, for me, it meant not a symphony, but a supernatural breath that enraptured my senses, predisposing me to the exercise of magnanimous actions. When it resounded, I felt profound calm, unequaled serenity and an indefinable well-being that translated into a calm disposition and confidence. And that mellow music persisted like a silky sheet under our heads. Harmonious sounds enveloped us and structured themselves to form a veritable musical mountain. As I understand it, these people spend hours and hours reveling in this peculiar melody which, for them, represents a pleasure as well as substantial spiritual rest and consequent physical comfort. Compulsively, the flying craft had led me to the agricultural area of that mysterious city and my meeting with Dr. Jansel had been the result of a carefully prepared plan. Chapter 13, The Agricultural Area. We traveled along a wide pavement, a veritable sheet of crystal glass, towards the food depots, when we stopped to start a new conversation. I felt so euphoric that I didn't know what to do. I don't know what to attribute it to, whether it was the sublime lunch or the transcendent space music. I find it hard to imagine, if our roles were reversed and I tried to provide the hospitality you have shown me, seeing you in one of our cities, traveling with countless difficulties in the air, enduring the dust and other filth, with a coarse diet of strong spices, how would you fare? This is an almost unrealizable hypothesis. I wouldn't be able to eat the food that you usually consume. In expressing himself in this way, he endeavored to make comments that I'm trying to reproduce. By eating vitamins and food, in theory I could live on your planet, but I wouldn't be able to stand the heavy meals of the Earthlings. Also, to survive on Earth's produce, we would need an average of about 60 kilos of plant food to extract enough vitamins for just one of our meals. Faced with this estimate, I joked back. So there wouldn't be enough food for you? We've already calculated that. If we were forced to emigrate to Earth and had lived there, everything would be used up in just a few years. We would need to make other arrangements to make it possible for us to stay there. So you mean you won't visit us even by the year 2000? In fact, it's thought that our planet will end that year. There will be significant changes by the year 2030 of your calendar, and a real moral and physical metamorphosis will take place, along with a radical change in all sectors of human life. How does the doctor know all this? By scientific or religious knowledge? I asked quickly. By science, which is closely linked to religious knowledge. If, today, we travel around your planet and observe it carefully, we become aware of this wonderful metamorphosis, which in fact, has already begun. As I walked past the leafy trees and beautiful flowers adorning the environment, I noticed that the trees were of the same species as those surrounding the hospital buildings. When we reached a dividing line, a kind of separating border, I saw a series of interesting buildings some 80 meters away, unlike anything I'd seen so far. They were very large tanks holding vitamins in liquid form, in other words, the public containers used to store the people's food. As I got closer, I saw that they resembled gigantic injection ampoules, with the same shape, with the indefectible, unfailing, tubular extension, the same as the part we usually use to extract the contained liquid. Entirely transparent, these tanks had no joints or seams on their smooth walls, and were supported at a low height by 1 meter pillars, semicircular in shape, with clamp fittings. They were parallel to each other, arranged at symmetrical intervals and measured about 50 meters long and about 4 meters in diameter. Underneath, there was a kind of faucet that acted as a tap, through which people collected the vitaminous liquid, drawing off the qualities and quantities they wanted. On the other side, there was a circular opening through which is where tanks of substances are brought directly from the mills. There were 35 of them, representing as many different types of vitamins that varied in color. The tanks were lined up in long rows and were exposed to the open air, with no special cover to protect them. Among the most familiar colors, I singled out yellow, blue, brown, white and other vivid and garish ones whose colors whose hues are familiar to us. The inhabitants distinguish vitamins by their color, use them and transport them to their homes in the freestanding craft. For the comfort of the people, in the recesses of the pillars themselves, there are cups for those who wish to take their meals on the spot, and it is customary for them to gather under the trees nearby, also taking the opportunity to inhale their salutary emanations. Behind each of the storage vials is an elevated platform where the delivery discs land, in order to proceed with unloading. Everything is very clean and perfectly executed. The restocking work is carried out under conditions of impeccable cleanliness. When I visited the plantations, I was amazed at the quality of the soil. It is granulated as if it were coarse sawdust, visibly heavier than ours, giving the impression of being, to a certain extent, hydrophobic. Its vivid purple color is pleasing to the eye. I even think that if it wasn't dusty, it wouldn't easily turn into clay. In general, the plantations take on the shape of our vineyards and expand to a height of 1 meter, parallel to the ground. The fruit trees have trunks as thick as our coconut palms, reaching a height of about 10 meters with thick and robust branches. The fruit grows on the branches, hanging from a stalk about 10 centimeters long. The leaves resemble those of our orange trees, but not as green, have a beautiful dark navy blue color and hang from the stalk mentioned. The color of the fruit is a reddish purple, slightly darker than our common beetroot, and the trunk of the tree is a light gray. The special arrangement of the branches is interesting, half on one side and half on the other, they look like large birds with their wings spread. These branches, which are 5 to 6 meters long, acquire this regular conformation because, when they are young and tender, they undergo a special treatment that leads them to acquire such a unique arrangement and, according to their criteria, aims to save space and make harvesting easier. There are a variety of fruits with different shapes and colors, despite the trees and foliage being similar, taking on a uniform appearance, there being little differentiating the actual trees. Tetrio is the name of a fruit whose type is that of the courgette and, according to Dr. Janzel, it contains valuable calcium. According to the information we received, they are very resistant and the plants are long-lived, far exceeding the most durable plants on planet Earth. Why, having such strong and robust trees, why don't you try to use them for other purposes? I asked. The trees, my friend, are far too generous, feeding us with their fruit. We can say that they contribute greatly to our development and we consider it inhumane to sacrifice them for other purposes. They also have life. They come from the soil and must return to it. If we make utensils out of wood, they will be short-lived. Since everything we produce is intended to last a long time, we give full preference to minerals. All kinds of fruit and other similar things are grown in that huge area. The plantations of the same species are separated by wide paths and, in their own groupings, these paths are less wide to make harvesting easier. From area to area, at a distance of about 100 meters, there are round platforms half a meter high for the landing of the craft that transport fruit and workers to carry out their activities. Next to these platforms, low down close to the ground, there is another platform of a small size where some video phones are placed, like those that we found on the avenues. This equipment on the smaller platforms can then be used to call or dismiss the delivery shuttlecraft. In the same growing area, there are 35 processing plants specializing in the preparation of liquid vitamins. They are set up in front of the fruit plantations where the vitamins are extracted. They carry out complex work in a practical method, free from confusion or hubbub, where everyone understands each other 100%, avoiding any unnecessary effort. Because it is condensed into healthy fruit extracts, the people's food comes in many varieties, enough for any palate, there being a large range of different tastes, flavors. The fruit is picked on the plantations, selected and taken to the extraction plants. They are treated for a long time, undergoing unknown processes to separate the pulp and provide the fruit nectar, that is its essence. These essences are sent to the laboratories, chemically treated to make them become fit for normal consumption. Once the degree of purity has been verified, the liquid is sent to the public warehouses for consumption. The fruit pomace and the remaining skin, pulp masses return to the soil of the fields to be used as fertilizer, just as is done for our crops. As people without teeth, we savor food, trying to keep it in our mouths for a few minutes until it is assimilated. Naturally, everyone has a predilection for this or that quality of vitamin food. In other words, appreciate one type of liquid vitamin more than another, even though they are aware of the need to absorb those that are most useful to the body and also to the overall nutrient balance. Once the food has been ingested, the juice is formed in the mouth, it goes straight to the distributor pouch which is situated at the level of the stomach, which is in charge of distributing the essentials to the various organs of the body. This way, they get iodine for their blood, calcium for their bones and phosphorus for their brains, with no waste left to expel. I know one thing for sure, and that is that when I ate that food, I felt as if I had been at a feast, and I was satisfied that I had maintained perfect organic balance while digesting. I was in such an excellent mood that I could do any exercise without exposing myself to the dangers of exertion after our usual meals. Afterwards, we sat under friendly trees around a table on which, like the others, there was a video phone set, where we began another talk. Tell me, doctor, doesn't it rain here? The rains are periodic and more pronounced at certain times, because it is a climatic phenomenon, although it's different from what happens on Earth. Here, as there, rain nourishes the soil, it is an indispensable fertilizer. Discussing the rain phenomenon, he went on to say. Clouds are formed in the atmosphere, but they are located in very high layers that don't even directly correlate with the atmosphere. By this I mean that the formation and consequences of rain are not the same as atmospheric changes. These bring about violent atmospheric changes and, in a process of their own, bring cold, winds, cyclones, real catastrophes for Earthlings.